Welcome to the CSIS podcast, a look at the week's news and foreign policy through the eyes of the experts at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm Colm Quinn. Xi Jinping comes to the US next week for his first state visit as China's president. The timing of the visit isn't exactly ideal for both sides, as the US weighs a response to China's alleged hacking of millions of its government records, and China deals with a faltering economy, as well as pursuing its territorial claims in the South China Sea. Nonetheless, it's an important moment for the two powers, as both vie for influence on the world stage. To talk us through the visit's implications is Chris Johnson, who leads our China studies as the Freeman Chair. My first question, with all the issues the US and China have to talk about, what comes first on the agenda?
Well, I think from President Obama's point of view, all of those subjects are going to be sort of foremost on the agenda. I think, you know, it's no one of these various bilateral irritants that has really gotten the situation to where we are now. It's a combination of factors. And I would add to the list also the sort of reemergence of human rights, not in the traditional manner of focusing on dissidents, things like that, but things like China's pending NGO, non-government organizations law, the recently passed national security law, which affect a broad swath of U.S. and other foreign interests and therefore increases pressure on governments to push back. From President Xi's point of view, I think it's safe to say that his intention is to come and get what he feels he needs with regard to the sort of pomp and circumstance that goes with a state visit. If you look at the way the Chinese are designing the visit, really most of the things President Xi will do of significance, including a major policy address, will happen in either Seattle or New York. He will touch down in Washington, you know, just long enough to have the private meeting with President Obama, do the arrival ceremony, get the state dinner, and then head off to New York very quickly. So I think it's safe to say that there are different agendas. You know, the Chinese want to sort of get the goodies, and the Americans want to convey those goodies while at the same time getting some kind of real practical progress on these very difficult bilateral issues.
When President Xi has gone back to Beijing, what kind of headline do you think he wants to see on the People's Daily when he arrives, summing up this trip?
I think it will primarily be a couple things. One, the U.S. and China increase their global cooperation on issues of significance. So I think we're going to talk climate change. We're going to talk fighting pandemic disease. The Iran nuclear deal obviously comes up in this context in U.S.-China cooperation, probably North Korea as well in a similar context. And he also wants the headline, the subtext of the headline, to be President Xi, China's new leader, manages the number one bilateral relationship with the United States without giving ground on China. His core interests. That's the message he wants to convey.
And how direct do you think that both sides will be? Obviously, there's a lot of points of contention we touched upon at the start. Is this the forum to do that, or is this more of a photo op for him, a photo op for our side?
It's a difficult situation because, of course, the context of a state visit is usually to emphasize the positive. And obviously, in the public interactions, I think we can expect that. In the private meetings, I expect President Obama to be very direct, especially on issues like cyber. We've seen this, of course, with Susan Rice's visit to Beijing, where she, I think, was very clear in highlighting U.S. concerns. Chinese were obviously concerned enough to send a very senior Politburo member, Meng Jianzhu, last week to the United States to kind of work on these issues. The Chinese media claims there was a major breakthrough. I didn't get that feel from the White House statement that was released on the discussion. So I think we can expect from the U.S. side, especially in the private context, less focus on thinking about how do we come up with new dialogue mechanisms on these contentious issues, cyber, maritime security, and more sort of laying out the evidence, if you will, of Chinese behavior and asking President Xi for a very honest assessment of what are we supposed to read in terms of intentions from this behavior. And then the public, again, I think will be very heavily focused on, you know, sort of bilateral cooperation.
And how does this differ from, say, meetings from previous years? Maybe on one end, you know, you've got a slightly weaker Chinese economy. Does that give the U.S. more leverage to kind of lay things out how it wants?
That's possible. I think in particular, there's a couple of differences. One is that the Chinese are signaling, just as they have been for a while now, this really started with Hu Jintao's last state visit to the United States, that they don't really have to conduct the relationship in the way that they used to as sort of the subordinate partner. So, you know, previously what we'd be discussing right now is we would have handed China a list of human rights detainees, and the discussion would be which one are they going to release as a goodwill gesture, you know, to create a positive atmosphere for the summit. That doesn't happen anymore. The Chinese clearly want to see from the U.S. some recognition of the changing global power dynamic, some recognition that the mechanics and the cadence of U.S.-China relations have to change in some way to reflect that. On the reverse side, I think from the U.S. point of view, no real incentive, certainly from a domestic political point of view, to do President Xi any favors while there are these many contentious issues on the table. In terms of the economic leverage it might provide, I think it's fair to say that the difficulties that China has been facing have taken some of the shine off of the U.S. decline meme that was very popular in Beijing in the immediate aftermath of the global financial crisis. You don't hear too many people talking about that these days. And I think that does provide the U.S. with some leverage. I mean, it certainly was noteworthy that as China's stock market was crashing, the U.S. GDP growth was revised upward rather significantly. That's not going to be lost on either side.
And there's talk now of cyber sanctions being put in place by the U.S. On China. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, my own sense is that it would not be wise to levy the sanctions before President Xi arrives. You know, it's basically a slap in the face at that moment. And the question is, you know, has Meng Jianzhu, this senior Politburo member's visit, given the administration enough to be able to say with some reasonable, you know, sort of justification, well, we've heard enough that we can delay at least beyond when he arrives. I think that's sort of the key question. The broader issue is, do the sanctions, while clearly having more teeth than the earlier indictments of PLA officers, you know, the reality is that for companies, which would be the focus of these sanctions, if they're operating in the international financial system and the United States sanctions you, your life becomes very difficult in terms of your ability to conduct financial transactions and so on. So they're not without teeth. But at the same time, it's sort of a same genus as the indictments in that it's more naming and shaming. Whereas perhaps probably the better approach in this case is to, you know, use the U.S.'s own extensive cyber capabilities in a very discreet way that's non-escalatory, of course, while simultaneously providing the Chinese with a dialogue channel option so as to give them a choice on this, as opposed to sanctions that, you know, will probably be modestly effective.
Okay. I want to talk finally about how the domestic effects what's going on the foreign level. Obviously, 2016 is rolling up. You'd think it had already come by the way that the media has been covering the election so far. How much does that play into what the Chinese think when they're dealing with the U.S.? Is there a case that they might be, you know, waiting us out, thinking that, you know, there's only a year to go? It's not something that they need to really worry about right now.
Yeah, I think that there is this notion in China that the Obama administration has sort of officially tipped over into lame duck status. You know, I think it's important for the Chinese to be reminded that the one thing that's true about the U.S. presidency is the U.S. president retains foreign policy decision-making and power right up to the minute when he leaves office. And I think that's important, you know, for the Chinese to understand. If, however, they decide that there's no point in sort of investing in the administration with this summit, they should consider carefully investing in the relationship itself. I would argue for two reasons. One, to hopefully sort of smooth the glide path to whatever does come next. I think the Chinese sort of properly assess that whatever comes next may be more likely to adopt sort of a more hostile position toward the Chinese, at least at the beginning of the administration. There's a strong track record of that over time. I think also from that perspective, there's a desire to understand on China's part that, you know, President Xi's visit, the Iran vote is over now. President Xi's visit really is the next major issue in the foreign policy calendar. So candidates of all stripes are going to have to comment publicly. And so the Chinese should be thinking about